What's up, guys? This is Justin Coffin for the 330 Sports Show. Today is Tuesday, May 24th, 2022. We are going to bring in a guest here in a minute. We're going to kind of go over the best and worst of the weekend. We're going to try a new little segment here. We're going to go tip of the cap, wag of the finger. So some good things, some bad things from the weekend, and talk a whole lot about sports. And we're going to cover some sports we don't normally cover. We're going to talk a little bit of golf, a little bit of horse racing, a little bit of NHL, but we're going to stick with the major stuff, the Browns, the Guardians, the Cavs, the NBA playoffs, stuff like that. So we will have a ton to talk about. I'm going to bring in another guy who has been on the show plenty of times before. He is a Boardman High School graduate. He's an Ohio State graduate. He now lives in Columbus, Ohio, outside of Columbus, Ohio, is Greg Kirchner. So I'm going to bring in Greg here. Greg, how you doing?
Hey, good, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. So Greg is old hat at this show, so he knows exactly what's going on. So Greg, let's just start out with, I guess, this weekend in sports. So give me, like I said, this is going to be a new segment where I'm just going to, you know, we used to do the best and the worst of the weekend. Well, you know, good and the bad, the ugly, all that stuff. So I guess we're just kind of renaming this. We're going to go tip of the hat. So who would you like to give a tip of the hat to this weekend in sports?
Yeah, so I guess, well, I don't want to steal your thunder necessarily, because I know we talked about this a little bit before, but I think with that being said, I think I might. So I'm gonna give my tip of the cap to Justin Thomas. So winning the PGA Championship over the weekend, coming back from 7 strokes behind going into the final round, which I think is one of the biggest comebacks of all time. You know, that comeback was aided by some people coming back to the field and not playing their best on Sunday. But he posted a solid round, finished earlier because he was behind. He finished earlier than the rest of a lot of the leaders. And unfortunately for Mito Pereira, who was basically winning the tournament almost the entire weekend, he faltered on 18. It was really tough to see. Tough to watch. He was in the driver's seat. And it brings up probably a good thing we can talk about, you know, about, you know, just a good philosophical sports discussion of, you know, there's always that Herm Edwards, you play to win the game, right? And I think that rings true in just about every sport, but golf might be one where playing to win the game can sometimes actually mean playing a lot more conservative. And Pereira went for the driver on 18 when he really didn't have to. He just needed to make par. He hit it in the water and, you know, and struggled from there and made a double bogey, missed the playoff. And to Justin Thomas's credit, he, you know, again, posted a score, let everybody kind of fall back to him. It turned, came into a playoff with him and Will Zalatoris that was 3 holes, and Thomas played well and won his second major. Both have been PGA championships. So he'd been kind of, for an elite golfer, he had been stuck on one major for a little while, I think 5 years. So, you know, I think, again, it was a great accomplishment for him. And, you know, there's, when you get into that multiple major winner discussion, you know, the group of people who've won more than one major gets a lot smaller, and he's got a chance to win a lot more throughout the rest of his career. So that's my tip of the cap.
No doubt. No doubt. He's got a great name too. Great first name, at least. So beware of the person with 2 first names. But like you said, with Pereira, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, did somebody in the crowd kind of egg him on to go for it? And, you know, that was kind of, I heard that this morning rumored.
I haven't heard that, but I'd be shocked if somebody swayed him from the crowd. But if you watch his tee shot, it was like he swung, like, if we're playing in a scramble and had a couple beers and are like, I'm gonna go for the long drive. Like, that's how he swung. And it was just like, I mean, he'd been hitting the ball beautifully all week, but my God, he really swung hard. Like, and it just, you know, I guess that's what you have a caddy for. You know, you kind of, the caddy is supposed to be kind of that voice of reason. So I don't know. He'd been driving it well all week. And, you know, I think, again, you kind of have that philosophical argument. Like, do you just go, do you play the same strategy you've been playing all week, or do you change? I mean, if he hits a 3-wood, those guys are pretty darn good at putting those in the fairway. Like a professional golfer, if all they need to do is make a par on a hole, that's a really tough hole, but they should be able to do that, I would say, 9 times out of 10. And even if they don't, they'll make a bogey. And if he made a bogey there, he would have been in the playoff. So the only way he kind of blows that up is doing what he did and hitting his shot into the water, tee shot in the water. But, you know, it was his first, he's a rookie. It was his first PGA championship. It was the first, he's never won a PGA tournament at all. So it was really the first time he was in that position. So hopefully it'll be a learning experience for him, and hopefully he'll get another chance. But, you know, as we see in sports, you don't know if you'll ever get that second chance. He's young. He should. You never know.
Yeah. That's interesting. You know, obviously you watch a lot more golf than I do, but, that was one of those names that I saw on the leaderboard, and I had never heard of the guy before this weekend. It's just one of those sports that if you don't follow it, you know, each tournament in and out, that you're not, you're going to recognize the Jordan Spieths and the Tiger Woods and guys like that, obviously Will Zalatoris. But you know, you're not going to recognize a guy's name like that if you're not, you know, a big time watcher of the sport. But it's kind of cool to see that like underdog. And then it, like you said, though, it kind of stinks to see him fizzle out a little bit. But hey, he was in it. Little shades to, is it Roy McAvoy and Tin Cup? Not laying up. He went for it. So it is what it is. And, you know, hey, he was in it right till the end, till hole 72, and just couldn't close the deal. So
he made a few bucks in the process. Third place.
Yeah, he did. No one's really shedding too many tears for him. So I'll switch to mine. So I'm going to go with early voting from the Preakness. This not actually early voting. I do recommend that in your next election, but early voting, the horse in the Preakness that won 7-2, and it was a filly, by the way, so a female horse that won the Preakness. I don't have the stats on that, but I believe that's the first filly to win one of those major stakes races in many, many years. So hats off to that horse and the owner and the rider. I had Justin Thomas as well on mine. And this is another weird one, because I don't really follow a whole lot of NHL hockey, but the Tampa Bay Lightning, man, are tearing through the NHL playoffs, and or at least this last round of the playoffs, and very quietly are going for a three-peat in hockey, which I don't think's been done in many, many years. So got a small little dynasty going on. The Columbus Blue Jackets knocked them out of the playoffs. I think, you know, that was the last time they lost the series. But, you know, quietly have won two cups in a row, and are right now in the, you know, the conference finals. So pretty great for them. But I do have one more golf tip of the cap. And through at least 1 hour of the PGA Championship, he was leading, and that is John Daly. So I want to give a tip of the cap to John Daly. And I just saw this report over the weekend, and I had to share it. So, Greg, you might be familiar with this, but it's an article from Will Brinson. This goes all the way back to 2008, but apparently this is still rings true. Maybe not the exact numbers, but John Daly, let me quote this article here. He had 21 cigarettes, 12 Diet Cokes, and 6 packs of peanut M&Ms. That is the list of items that John Daly took to play 18 holes at a practice round in 2008. It might sound unreal, but it is the truth. Will Brinson followed him on that. So John Daly, 21 cigarettes, 12 Cokes, and 6 packs of peanut M&Ms. So let me ask you this. If you had to consume one of those things, but you had to consume all of them like John Daly did, I'm guessing it's probably not the 21 cigarettes, which I think is a pack of cigarettes roughly. Could you do 21 cigarettes, 12 Diet Cokes, or 6 packs of peanut M&Ms. Which one are you going for there?
I think you almost have to go with the M&Ms, as much as that would be like 2,000 calories or something. But at least I feel like 12 Diet Cokes. If I have a coffee in the afternoon, I'm jittery. Like, I can't imagine right. 12 Diet Cokes and like what that would do to the nerves and the just, I don't think that'd be good. So I think I'd have to go to the M&Ms, but
that is not good for anybody.
The John Daly stories are unbelievable. There's so many like urban legends, but I feel like they're probably mostly all true.
I think after the first round, he was at a casino, and then either the next day or even before one of the rounds, he was at a Hooters as well, taking pictures with the waitresses there. So hats off, tip of the cap to John Daly for, like you said, legend, just being a legend in his own right. Let's revisit that John Daly. I'd like to go over some of those urban legends of John Daly later on. So we'll do that on a future show. All right, let's go to kind of the opposite. So the bad of the weekend. I know you and I discussed one of the really bad ones over the weekend. So we might have the same one, but I'll let you lead off with this one. So the wag of the finger, who do you got to give the Dikembe Mutombo or what's his name from Seinfeld?
The Babu.
Babu, yes, Babu.
The Babu bot, the wag of the finger. Yeah, I'm probably the same one you had, but I'm going with Josh Donaldson for this one. Like that was that happened Saturday. That was just one of those weird, like, what are you thinking? You know, things that happen that would, you know, calling Tim Anderson Jackie and referring back to some article that was written in, you know, 3 years ago where he compared himself to Jackie Robinson. You know, obviously just a terrible look for so many reasons. And I don't know what to make of Josh Donaldson. He's obviously a great baseball player. I think a former MVP, you know, in his prime was one of the scariest guys, you know, to have to face. But, you know, there's always been something about him where you're like, this guy looks like he might be evil. But he, you know, clearly in this case, he, you know, whether it was just an ignorant comment or whether it was a full blown, you know, racist kind of intentional comment, it's probably, you know, you can speculate all you want, but it obviously was a stupid thing to say. It escalated, rightly so, insulted Tim Anderson and insulted the White Sox. And Monty Grindal got in his face when he came up to bat. So, just a bad look. And he got a one game suspension. I guess he's appealing it. But it's, you know, just one of those things that, like, you kind of wonder about the guy's character making a comment like that. So,
yeah, that's
And he also may have, not that this is like, you know, any way outweighs the social importance of what happened, but he also may have lit a fire under the White Sox, which nobody needs that to happen. Cause I think the White Sox swept a doubleheader the next day off of the Yankees and Anderson hit a 3-run homer. And sometimes those things, you know, especially the way his teammates stood up for him and the way Tony La Russa stood up for him, sometimes that lights a fire under a team, and that's a team you don't want to get fired up, because they started slow, but they are about as talented as there is in the league, as we know, because we see them 20 times a year.
No doubt. Yeah, that's that was the same one I had. Joe back here, who is producing the show and obviously owns our studio down here, brought one up that I saw but completely forgot about. So there was an airport fight between a United agent and an ex-NFL player, and it went viral over the weekend. Are we able to show that? He's going to try to show it. If not, I'm just going to recommend just Google this United airline. I don't know the whole, you know, when you see those videos going viral, you don't know, maybe there was something that led up to the point of contention. You know, there maybe there was words exchanged or something else, but this was pretty bad. So you might have it here. So I'm gonna have Joe play this and just take a look on the screen here.
Do we know who that is? Do we know who the former player is?
I don't.
He's a cornerback for. I'll find it.
He used to play for the Broncos.
Okay, there he is.
So, I mean, again, I don't know what led up to this, but this guy squared up to him, the United agent.
Yeah.
And it looks like to me, I mean, a cornerback, he's probably not much taller than 6'1, 6'2, but. I mean, you just know your limits, you know your limits a little bit. And he's like, and the guy comes back up to him and you can even hear him saying, he wants some more. So yeah, that's kind of a wag of the finger there. Maybe know your limits. Maybe don't overstep your grounds there. So wag of the finger to that United airline employee, well, former employee, it sounds like. So unfortunate incident there. So it is what it is, you know.
So real quick back to the Anderson and Donaldson thing. What are your thoughts on Tim Anderson? Because he's pretty polarizing.
Yeah. Well, I actually picked him last year to win the American League MVP. I think he leads the majors currently in multi-hit games, something like that, but he's not a great defender at a very valuable position, but personality wise, he, like you said, is very fiery. I don't know. I like him as a player. He's one of those guys you probably want on your team and, you know, you probably don't want to play against. That's my two cents on him. I don't have a strong opinion. Like, I don't dislike or like him overly one way or the other, but I think as a baseball player, at least from a hitting perspective, he's really solid. So how about you?
I actually really do like him, even though he's on a rival team. Even though he flipped off our fans too earlier in the year. I mean, he's definitely a fiery guy, and you hit it on the head. I think it's like, you love when he's on your team, hate when he's not. But yeah, he's always a dangerous out, but he's had a little bit of a hard time getting the ball from shortstop to first base this year. I think you hit it on the head. He's made a ton of errors this year, but yeah, he's a extremely talented player, and I really think he's kind of the straw that stirs their drink.
As a
team, he's the top of their order. He can hit for average, hit for power, he can run, so he's a fun guy to watch, but
no doubt.
Anyway,
yeah, no, he's a solid hitter, but if he can't get that, you know, fielding, he's got kind of the Chuck Knobloch, the shakes or whatever you want to call it, the yips or whatever they call it at the major league level. But if he can find his way to be a defensive, you know, stud as much as he is on the offensive side, that White Sox team's going to be dangerous to deal with.
It's almost similar to Fernando Tatis. Like, it's just, he's got that. I mean, he's maybe not quite as, you know, as brash and as known as him, but they're similar. Their games are similar, and they're both, they both struggle at shortstop. San Diego put Tatis out in the outfield a little bit. I wonder if Chicago would think of doing something similar. Cause yeah, you can't have your shortstop making a ton of errors. So,
no.
So
anyway. Yeah, too valuable of a defensive position up the middle to, you know, that you're involved literally in every play. So, you have to, you know, that's 50% of the job right there. So, all right, Greg, let's switch gears. And I'm just going to call this fair or foul. So fair or foul, we're switching to Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban. Everybody's favorite topic. I feel like if you do a sports podcast, you're legally obligated to talk about name, image, and likeness. So we're going to touch on it. We're not going to dive deep into it, but it was shot down at the high school level, at least in the state of Ohio. in college, it's kind of the, you know, I've heard the term wild, wild west out there because there's really no rules, no regulations. The NCAA is worthless, really. It doesn't do anything. So there's no governing body over this name, image, and likeness, which is, I think the way it was intended was, hey, let's get some money in some of these college players' hands so they have some spending money. You know, they're making a lot of money for the university. You know, maybe a guy gets a car, maybe a guy gets, you know, a job or whatever. It's kind of like the Polly Walnuts thing from Sopranos, where it's like he was getting paid no-show jobs like they weren't in the past. Like, you know, these college kids in the past, there was like these handshake deals. Hey, you know, occasionally just say you like my business and I'll pay you like you work here, you know, or, you know, you even go back to the Ohio State. They were trading tattoos for like autographs and their gold pants and stuff. And that was like the biggest violation ever. Unfortunately, ended up costing Jim Tressel his job. And it's unfortunate because that would totally be legal now. So I guess, what are your major thoughts on name, image, and likeness? And I guess Nick Saban kind of calling Jimbo Fisher out, basically saying, hey, they bought their whole recruiting.
Yeah, gosh, what a dramatic mess that is. First of all, shout out to AC Slater. I think AC Slater was one of the first NIL guys. At Stansbury University offered him a car, if you remember, back in his football recruitment. But
that's a good reference. I did not know that.
starting with NIL, I'm fully on board with the fact that I think that. But, you know, college athletes should be able to profit off of their name, image, and likeness. And you know, there's so much money, especially in football and basketball, that go around that I think the spirit behind this rule is good, but I think like anything, I don't know if it's gotten more out of control than the NCAA thought it would, or they didn't care, but it's like any laws or any regulations that you put into place or anything that you allow, people are going to take it to the furthest extent possible and they're going to bend the rules and they're going to do everything they can do. So it clearly seems like it's spiraled out of control. So I don't know how you control it. They've kind of created this monster. Again, I think the idea makes sense, but being able to, you had that, you know, wide receiver transfer from Pitt to USC, and there's, you know, that now you're getting to the point where there's basically just, you're just almost offering money. You are offering money to get transfers or bring people in. Now, for Saban to say what he said was, I think it was like all kind of an holy shit moment when he said that, because that's just not something that Saban's typically, you know, toes the line relatively well. He's opinionated, but to go after,
he's calculated.
So that was clearly, he made those comments for a reason, and he knew that there was going to be backlash, and rightly so. Jimbo Fisher came back hard, and these guys are old friends. I mean, presumably. So it's interesting, and it was, I mean, I'm sure it's still the talk of the South right now. And I think, I think at the end of the day, it's probably two guys who have probably spent a lot of their careers bending around the rules a little bit, kind of calling each other out. So, it's like, it almost broke sort of, I feel like between the coaches, it probably broke some sort of like unspoken code that, look, we don't talk about how we do things because we're all doing stuff. We're all bending the rules, but, it'll be interesting. It certainly makes that A&M Alabama game more interesting. And Saban probably wasn't wrong with what he said. I don't know. If I had to say, who would I trust more, just gut feeling, I probably would trust Saban a little bit more than Jimbo Fisher. Jimbo Fisher seems to me like a little slimy
used car salesman.
Yeah, a little used car salesman. Yeah, I just... I don't know. They're there to win football games. It's like, I mean, clearly, and they're going to do whatever it takes. But Jimbo said the right things to protect his players, but boy, he went pretty personal. I think it hurt him pretty deeply that his friend would do that. So what a dramatic mess. And, you know, we'll see what the fallout is. I know they both got kind of, would they get sanctioned or warned by the SEC for doing that. So I don't know if that'll calm it down, but boy, whenever that game is, that ticket just got a lot hotter, and there's going to be a lot of hype leading up to that game. I don't know what
even before that too. I know I think it's Greg Sankey is the SEC commissioner's name.
Yeah.
And I think he shut them down, basically said, nope, we're not saying anything else. But when it comes to that SEC, like coaches day or press conference, that's going to be a hot ticket in the media world that, you know, they're going to just be trying to poke the bear to get them. And they're going to have to sit in a room for several hours together, whether they speak or not. So should be very, very, very interesting. And then, you know, you got guys like Lane Kiffin over there now at Ole Miss. That's going to be just like sitting there eating his popcorn and be like, oh, we can't afford those guys anyway. So I'm gonna just let you two fight it out and we'll see what we get. So very, very interesting stuff. But like I think you said it right and said it best. The idea of NIL is the right idea. However, it just got to be, there has to be some sort of even playing field, whether that's a salary cap type thing that's like in pro sports, but basically the amateurism of college sports is gone for the most part, at least at the major high up levels, like, you know, your Power Five football program. So should be very, very interesting, but I really just hope everyone can play on an even playing field. But, you know, obviously you and I are Ohio State Buckeyes and fans. I don't think this is going to affect Ohio State one way or the other, because they're already in that upper echelon. There's Fortune 500 companies in Columbus, Ohio. There's going to be tons of money out there for Ohio State athletes, but I like the way Ohio State's doing it. They're not necessarily guaranteeing freshmen money up front. I know like Schottenstein and like Cardell Jones have like this little fund they started, which is great, but they're basically saying, hey, come to Ohio State, get developed, you'll get your NIL money once you succeed on the field. And then more so than the NIL money, we can get you to the NFL where you can make huge money. So I think that's Ohio State's way of doing it. I think that's probably what Alabama is going to do. But all in all, you know, we'll see what this is. You know, it's going to take a couple years for this to all figure itself out, and should be an interesting ride in the meantime, you know, especially when you get press conferences like Jimbo and Saban. So, you know, it's hard to trust the guy named Jimbo, first of all.
Yeah.
And both of those guys, by the way, from the state of West Virginia as well. So, they can maybe go sing some Take Me Home, Country Roads, and mend the fences. All right. Let's shift gears now, Greg. Let's go to the NBA playoffs. It actually, you know, there's been some good early on games in the series. Really, these Eastern and Western Conference final games have not been that good. I honestly have turned them off, you know, after halftime for the most part. But Golden State up 3-0 on Dallas, and Boston and Miami, although they're tied, I feel like both teams have won by like 15 points or more in every game. So I guess just overall thoughts on the series and who you got to go to the finals.
Yeah, I mean, same. It's been really bizarre, especially these last couple rounds have been bizarre, where it seems like there's been an inordinate number of blowouts, a few comebacks. I mean, there's always this gambling theory on the NBA playoffs. I'm sure you've heard it, but bet on the team that lost the previous game because they're the team that's going to have to come out with the urgency. So we've seen that play out in the extreme. So we talked about earlier the play to win the game philosophy. So this is another kind of overarching question that I have. It's kind of unanswerable, but it's a good debate question. And it has to do with upsets. You know, upsets are great when they happen, but sometimes the fallout of an upset isn't so great. Like, think about, you know, in the NCAA tournament, St. Peter's, it was awesome watching them go through, but would you rather watch UNC play St. Peter's or Kentucky in the regional final type thing?
Right.
The Kentucky Derby, right? The longest shot wins, unbelievable, doesn't race in the Preakness. Most people watch the Preakness so they can watch the Derby winner. And yep. I guess to a lesser extent, Dallas beating Phoenix was incredible. But I think we all would have rather watched Phoenix and Golden State play it out for the Western Conference title. And it's proven to be kind of a dull series, although game two is really good. So, you know, I actually saw Dallas as a 1-point favorite tonight. You know, maybe they get one, get kind of a pride game and at least, you know, have it go back to I was going to say Oakland, but they play in San Francisco now. Go back to San Francisco to close it out. But that's done in 4 or 5, you got to think. And then I don't know what the heck to make of the East. It's been a bizarre series.
Yeah.
The Heat have, I mean, I think on straight talent, the Celtics seem to have the better team, but now the Heat are, it's interesting watching like Victor Oladipo and Kyle Lowry playing meaningful minutes and being, it's like the clock got turned back 5 years.
Right.
Jimmy Butler's kind of all over the place. I know he's battling injury, and Bam Adebayo is also probably the Heat's best player, certainly probably their most talented player. And he kind of shows up, doesn't show up. And I do think Spoelstra is an absolutely phenomenal coach. But Boston seems to be the more talented team, and, you know, mm-hmm. that's now a best of three series with Miami having home court. So hopefully those games are compelling. I would like the Heat to win, cause I think just always kind of hated the Celtics, but I would say, I think the Celtics have the edge on the floor, but the Heat have home court. So I think that one will find its way to 7 games, and I'm just hoping these next few games are enjoyable, because these have just been duds. Last night was probably the worst of them all. It was just awful. So I don't know. And maybe the finals will be great. It's an interesting, I think we're used to there being really dominant teams in the NBA, and we haven't had that the last couple of years. So it's made the playoffs more interesting. Mm-hmm. In terms of, there's a lot of teams that could win it, as opposed to kind of that, you know, where, you know, we grew up and you knew the Bulls were going to make it. And now, I mean, in LeBron's heyday, you kind of knew it was going to be Cavs Warriors. So it's cool that they can kind of, you know, that there's a lot of different teams that have a shot here. So hopefully the conference finals and the finals sort of salvages what has kind of been a little bit of a dull playoffs.
Yeah, no doubt. Before the playoffs started, I picked, I had the Suns in the finals playing the Celtics, with the Suns winning in like 6 or 7 games. Obviously, that pick fizzled out, but I still have a shot with the Celtics, even though I think the Heat are the more likable team. Mm-hmm. And that could just be because of, you know, my background with not liking Boston, like you said. Honestly, this is a Cleveland Cavaliers fan. I don't want either one of these teams to win. You got Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra and LeBron's former team down there in Miami and taking their talents to South Beach. And you got Boston with Paul freaking Pierce in the wheelchair coming out and like always wearing that stupid ass hoodie, sitting on the sidelines with that smirk on his face. So there's a lot there, but I will say I've come around on the Heat. I like Jimmy Butler. I do like Eric Spoelstra. I think they have a lot of scrappy players on that team. Like you were saying, you turn the clock back and those guys are getting after it. They get after it defensively. And I think Boston has the better team. So I'm just hoping at this point for a next three good games and let the better team win, and we'll see how it all plays out. But Golden State looks to be back to their dominant form, and looks like Golden State is still not out of their, I don't want to call it a dynasty, but still kind of close to, you know, you winning those 3 titles and, making it to the finals 5 years in a row. So they may be back. We shall see. Let me pose this question to you. With I excluded a Miami Heat player on this, but I have Luka Doncic, who's 23 years old, Steph Curry, who's 34 years old, and Jason Tatum, who's 24 years old. Okay, if you could pick one of those guys on Team X, you know, let's even say, let's just put them on Cleveland, you know, if you could pick one of those guys, they will be on your favorite team for the next five seasons. Now, you might want to factor age in here. Again, Luka 23, Curry 34, Tatum 24. If you could pick one of those guys for the next five seasons, which one are you going with and why?
Wow. Yeah, probably due to age, I'd have to take Curry out, but I would say Luka, but it's by a hair, because Tatum has absolutely emerged into, I guess I haven't really thought about, is he top five? Probably not quite top five, but he's safely now in the top 10, probably, of NBA players and rising. Mm-hmm. But Luka is just, I think his ability to get others involved too, and just it still boggles my mind looking at him, because he just looks like he's not even close to the most athletic guy.
No.
But you know, that you just watch what Golden State's do. I mean, there's times they're basically playing like almost a box and one, like, with him, which you just don't see in the NBA. And he just, his ability to create for himself, just shoot, you know, obviously stand still or fade away, and also find the open man, I think, is for somebody that you'd want on your team. And I do think to get to where he's in a little bit of like a LeBron, like early career LeBron situation with his team, where he really is the alpha dog. There's nobody else that's even, what would you even consider? There's no one else that you would say is more than an above average NBA player on this team. There's no other complementary, like, extreme talent. So he's doing kind of what LeBron did, where he's carrying the weight of an entire team on his shoulders, essentially making other people better. And, you know, almost single-handedly, I don't want to say that because other guys step up, but you know what I mean? Single-handedly leading a team to this far tells me that if you get him on a team with more talent, I think he clearly could, he could be the best player on a championship winning team, no questions asked. But if he had some compliments, boy, he can make those other pieces better too.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Yeah. And I guarantee, I saw something where Mark Cuban said, if I have to choose between Luka and my wife, I'm calling the divorce lawyer tomorrow. he obviously loves him, and, you know, I'm guessing he'll build around him, you know, that talent. You know, Jalen Brunson's a nice player, but again, he's not a star. You need those, like you said, complementary pieces around him, like LeBron eventually got, you know, in his career.
Yeah, and that's kind of, you know, and again, we could do a whole show on this topic, but kind of thinking about, you know, what, because these last couple years, like we had just talked about, you have super teams, but the super teams haven't gotten anywhere. So are they really super teams? You know, you have that old method of let's get Kyrie and Durant and Harden together, and let's see if that hasn't worked. So now you kind of have, you're back to sort of the, in a lot of cases, the 80s and 90s model, where you have one superstar and a bunch of complimentary guys on a bunch of different teams. Giannis has his guys. Luka's got his guys. Tatum's now got his guys. He's kind of ascended to that level. Steph's got his guys. What is the next, you know, what is the next 3 to 5 years of the NBA look like? You know, does a team like Dallas go out and get two stars to pair with Luka and they become a dynasty? Or do we see this kind of trend continue where guys say, no, I'm going to be the lead dog and I'm going to get my guys and we're going to go try to win it. And then, you know, as I think about it, this certainly feels like we're coming on a window for the Cavs to potentially make that leap in the next couple years, where you don't have a dominant team right now. And I don't see how we're going to get to a dominant team unless, like I said, a Dallas or a Golden State or you name the team really starts consolidating some stars. So
right.
I feel like it's a pretty good spot for the Cavs, and thinking that we can make that leap, you know, as soon as next year with Sexton back and whatever they do in the off season to get us right in the mix to have a shot to go far, you know, quickly.
Agreed. And, you know, I know Colin Sexton's kind of a polarizing player. Some people love him. Some people are like, it's not the right fit. Darius Garland started blooming when he went out, things like that. But, you know, if you can work him in and either bring him back, you know, and he's like leads the second unit, or you put him and maybe Caris LeVert in that first round pick, or maybe even Kevin Love in a trade, and you can bring in another. I think the Cavs' weakest area is a scoring wing. So, you know, I think they were hoping Caris LeVert would be that. I think he had less than 20 games with the Cavs, didn't quite fit in. So the Cavs have some really, really interesting decisions to make over this offseason. You know, Altman, trust in him. Hopefully he is the guy to pull the trigger. He's made some great moves to get them where they're at. And this is a team that really, you know, they weren't expected to be good. They become good. Now they know they're good. Can they take that next step next year? So that's a big, big if. But if you, you know, pull the trigger on the right deals, if you make the right moves, if your chemistry meshes, the Cavs have a lot of potential going forward. I hate to use that word potential because, you know, a lot of people will say potential gets coaches fired. You know what I mean? But if you don't get it done on the court, but if the Cavs can really like hit on all cylinders, they could be top three team in the East and compete for those Eastern Conference championships. So I guess real quick before we turn the page on this, if you could see the Cavs, you know, you don't necessarily have to name a player, but if you could see them make a move, what would you like to see them bring in?
I mean you're right that we definitely need a scoring wing. I'm kind of in the camp though that I'd like to see what Sexton kind of fits in with, I mean, he's been on the team, but how he fits in with this group and with Garland, sure. Garland's emergence. Cause I've always loved Colin Sexton as a player, and I love his bulldog mentality and his ability to score. And he, you know, I think he's a, you know, I don't know, top, what do you want to say? Top 30, 35 player in the NBA. And he's, sure. And you know, I think he's a, what was he scoring? 25 or so points a game. You know, he's in that 20. There's just not a lot of guys that can do that have that capability. Right. And it'll just depend. Can he sacrifice a few of those points, play, you know, team basketball, which I think maybe he gets wrongfully hated on for not being a team player. I think sometimes he's just, you know, he was the alpha on the team for a few years. So he's going to go get buckets when he needs to, but I'm intrigued to see that. So, you know, as far as players, I don't have a specific one in mind, but yeah, if you're going to get rid of him, you got to get somebody that is, you know, a top 30 guy in return or a haul of guys. But as we know in the NBA, it really doesn't, getting a haul of guys doesn't really matter. You need the stars. It's a star driven league,
yeah, but quality over quantity in the NBA for sure.
But I think again, with what do we have, 14th draft pick, we can, it's a deep draft, and it's an opportunity to, you know, potentially nail another draft pick. And you could see with Mobley, you hit one draft pick in the end, you know, you hit a couple draft picks, you hit Garland and Mobley, and you hit a free agent signing or, you know, or whatever. And all of a sudden you make that leap. Doesn't take a lot.
Yeah. And if Isaac Okoro could step up and be the 3-point shooter that they had hoped, then possibly that's the player the team needs, who's already on the team as well. So,
yeah,
We'll touch base with the Cavs definitely again right before the draft coming up in, I think, just a couple weeks here. So, all right, Greg, we don't talk a whole lot of NHL. We got about 15 minutes to touch on a few subjects here. So let's just spend like maybe like 2 minutes on the NHL. And I had mentioned Tampa Bay to me is just, you know, been that team that's quietly creating a little dynasty down there with the Lightning. But you got Tampa Bay, they're awaiting the Rangers, Carolina Hurricane winner. And then you got the Avalanche up 3-1 over the Blues. And then you got Edmonton up 2-1 over Calgary. So what's your overall thoughts real quick on the NHL playoffs?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've actually, because of these NBA games, I've actually watched probably more NHL over the past couple of weeks than I have NBA. And playoff hockey is tremendous. Even if you're not a huge fan, I recommend flipping games on just because it's the intensity is kind of, it's pretty unmatched, and playoff hockey is spectacular. I mean, you hit everything on the head. I feel like with Tampa, they're just, you know, that, yeah, the opportunity to go three-peat. I think it's been, I think it was like the New York Islanders back in the early 80s that was the last team to three-peat, but I might be wrong there. But they are absolutely on fire. They just disposed of the Florida Panthers, who actually had the best record and the best regular season record in the NHL. They swept them. They're riding a hot goaltender right now. So Andrei Vasilevsky is, you know, probably the best goaltender in the world. And the analogy I would use is like, it's like when you have a hot pitcher in a baseball playoffs. Difference being, you can pitch that pitcher nine innings every game. And that's what happens when you have a hot goaltender. We've seen a lot over the years. They can take a team all the way. So they have the confidence. They've been there before. Hot goaltender. They're going to be really hard to beat. Carolina Rangers is a really good series. I think that game four is tonight. Home teams won all the games so far. I think Carolina will probably win that series. They were right there with Florida Panthers as the one of the best teams in the NHL. So I think that'll be a great series, regardless of who gets there. But Tampa's going to be really hard to beat. In the West, I think Colorado's in command of their series, and I think St. Louis's goaltender got hurt in one of the games. So I would expect Colorado to finish that out. But last but not least, the best series that I've been watching, the games are a little late at night, is actually that Edmonton Calgary series. So they're both in the Alberta province in Canada. So it's like the Battle of Alberta, which it's like Dodgers, Giants, Yankees, Red Sox. The teams hate each other. A lot of fights, a lot of action, really good. And I know everybody's heard of Connor McDavid, but for those who've not seen Connor McDavid, he might be the most exciting professional athlete in the four major sports right now, as far as dynamic. And he is putting up numbers in the playoffs that, you know, are almost Gretzky-esque in what he's been doing. I think he's got 23 points, which is a combination of goals and assists. He's got 23 points in 10 games, which is an absurd pace. And every time he's out on the ice, something interesting happens. He is must-see TV. So, I think it's like a 9:30. Their games are 9:30 or 10, but they're great to watch, and that'll be a great series. And right now I think Edmonton's up 2-1. So the West is kind of a free for all. But yeah, Tampa, you hit it on the head. Tampa's kind of the story right now, and can they finish the three-peat?
Very interesting. So Greg Kirchner dropping some NHL knowledge on the show. I think we've probably in the 200 episodes or so of this show, I think I've probably talked about hockey maybe like four or five times. So it's really cool though. I had a guest on about a month ago, and she got her start with like covering hockey around the country. She's a local news reporter, and her name is Dani Pulaski. And she is a huge New York Rangers fan. And just like talking with her a little bit, you can see the passionate fans that these hockey teams have. And it's just really cool. And like you said, hockey might have the best playoffs in all of sports. Like usually the NBA playoffs are pretty great. Baseball playoffs are pretty good. Obviously the NFL playoffs this past year were fantastic, but hockey is right up there and takes, you know, second to none to all of those sports. So, like Greg said, if you get, you know, get some time and you can check out some of those hockey playoff games, highly, highly recommend it, to check out. So, all right, Greg, we got about 10 minutes here. Let's switch gears another time. We're going to go back kind of more to our wheelhouse a little bit here. Let's talk a little bit of Ohio State football. Recently, Ryan Day signed a contract extension for, which will now keep him at Ohio State, at least through the contract through 2028. We'll see if he, you know, stays that long or, you know, the NFL comes calling, but let's hypothetically say Ryan Day stays, through 2028, which would include this season. So let's just say 7 years. So in 7 years, I'm going to set the over under at national titles at 1.5. What do you think for Ryan Day?
Oh man. Well, my heart says over, and I'll say it's two. I'll say it's two, and I admit, and you know, basically one of them I think is hopefully this season. I think that,
yes,
I think the opportunity that, you know, and it's so hard in any sport, but especially college football of all the sports, to be like, oh yeah, this is the year, we got to win it this year. But it feels like this is the year to do it. You have, you know, we've had so many great quarterbacks come through in the last number of years, but you know, we might have the best one right now who's gearing up for a season. It could be, you know, Joe Burrow-esque maybe. I mean, you know, right. what's the bar on this season for Stroud? So you have everything, you know, you have all the talent. I think, you know, I've seen some metrics where we have kind of the most returning talent of any of the top teams. Yeah, schedule is
schedule's tough.
Difficult, but you know, you have Michigan at home, you got Notre Dame at home,
Wisconsin at home.
So some of your toughest games are at home. You know, again, you got to go out and win all your games or maybe lose one. And that's just, but yeah, I think this he gets one this year, and then I think, you know, he figures out a way to get another one. But we know how hard that is. But I think what we know with Ryan Day, you know, it's crazy. We lose Tressel, and it was like, how could we possibly replace, you know, a legend? And then Urban comes along, and it was like, wow, this is unbelievable. We're blessed again with another great coach. And then Urban goes, and it's like, all right, now we just, there's no way. And then Ryan Day has somehow managed to kind of carry, get the torch from Urban and somehow raise the bar on this program. And, you know, so regardless of how many titles we end up winning, we know that we're going to be, you know, we're going to have top five talent almost every year. We're going to be in the running for, you know, Big Ten title, college football playoff, and we're going to give ourselves a chance every year, and eventually it'll happen. So it's just, again, we probably don't sit back and think about how lucky we are enough. Like we've got the crap end of the stick with a lot of our other teams, but with Ohio State football, it's been unbelievable. Yeah. I think it was like, we made the Rose Bowl, and it was like, oh, Rose Bowl or whatever, like down year. And it's just unbelievable that that's now where we're at as a, with the expectation. So I'll say over. What?
Okay. Well, and Greg can obviously vouch for this, but I went to two Buckeyes games last year. One was the Akron game, which Stroud didn't even play in. You know, Kyle McCord, actually Akron goes down and scores the final or first touchdown. Oh shit. Akron's up 7-0. And then it's like 56-7 at halftime. Greg and I left at halftime. And then I came down again for the Purdue game later in the year. And what, it's like 56-7 again at halftime.
Yeah, so crazy.
This next year, you know, I hope there's still some big wins, but my goal is to stay through an entire Ohio State football game. I haven't done that. I haven't had to do that in a few years based on the performance of that team. But like Greg said, I think, you know, we'll spend a whole show coming up on just the Buckeyes, but Ohio State really has the opportunity. And I think this is just my opinion. I think that I will never say losing to Michigan is good, but I will say that team seems to have a new focus, a new attitude, a new toughness, and a new maybe desire to go out and win over not just that team, but every game because of what happened in Ann Arbor last year. They kind of rested on their laurels, thought maybe we could just roll. You know, their question or their toughness was questioned after that game last year. So I think that brought a whole new perspective to some of these players and really woke them up. So like we said earlier, don't poke the bear. Michigan, Desmond Howard, Jim Harbaugh started talking trash in the offseason, and let's hope they pay dearly for it this coming November. So, but you got to take care of business. You got the freaking Notre Dame Fighting Irish first game of the season. So what an awesome game that will be. We'll talk plenty about that coming up this summer. And we obviously have some mutual friends that are both Ohio State and Notre Dame fans. So this should be a really, really good upcoming summer to talk Buckeyes and Fighting Irish. Greg, one quick question on CJ Stroud, and just a yes or no on this one. Will CJ Stroud win the Heisman Trophy this coming season?
Yes. I'll give the homer answer. I'll say yes, but I really think that he is going to have a historic season. You know, when I said Burrow, you know, kind of a Burrow type season, I don't know, like, what do we have? I guess we'll think of 12 regular season games, Big Ten championship before the Heisman. You know, I think 50 touchdowns is attainable, passing touchdowns, and he's not much of a runner, but you know, I think he can have one of those years. And if he does that, I think, and the team success follows, I think he will certainly be there. You know, if he, get, you know, knock on wood, stays healthy, and I think he'll win it.
Okay. All right. Very good. All right. I got to ask you this before we get out of here, because, it's coming on tonight on HBO. It's been talked about. There is, I believe it's Real Sports with Brian Gumbel. And one of the employees, one of the interviewers for that, will be talking to, I believe, two of the accusers of Deshaun Watson tonight on this show. I don't think we're going to find out any, you know, new information. However, I think once people put a face to a story, or, you know, I think sometimes, you know, that can really hit home, you know, whether what, you know, and again, I've said this from the beginning, I'm a Cleveland Browns fan. I have been a Browns fan before Deshaun Watson. I will be a Browns fan after Deshaun Watson. I'm not telling anybody how they should feel. But I guess I'm really interested in what's going to happen, you know? So there is a suspension most likely coming. So my question for you is, I guess this all plays out. I've heard some people say 4. I've heard some people say 6. I've heard some people say 8. So let me just pose this question to you. Over under 6.5 games, Deshaun Watson suspended this upcoming season. 6.5.
Oh boy. Yeah. And you even hear, like, you know, and I think I echo everything you said, by the way. I mean, yeah, this is a tough topic, just because we are such passionate Browns fans, and it is obviously a move that made us better on the football field, but you know, it was done, and we know what the risks and the optics are associated with it. And it's hard to, you know, I think there's a lot of people that are having to kind of come to grips with this situation and how they feel about it. Yeah. But I will say, I think 6 is probably the number. You know, it sounds to me like it might be the number. I think it's in everybody's best interest from a football standpoint and a life standpoint to get it figured out and done as soon as possible too. I think that my bigger concern is this, for both for everybody involved, as well as the football side of it, is that this thing drags out and continues to kind of go into during the season or even goes into the off season. Who the heck knows with appeals processes and all that. I think it's in everybody's best interest to, you know, come to a decision, assess the penalty and move on from there to the best we can. I'll say it's six, but I just don't know if it's going to happen quickly. It's hard to know that.
Yeah. It could be one of those things where, you know, it's an unprecedented situation in the terms of, you know, nothing's apples to apples. People are going to say Ben Roethlisberger, Tyreek Hill, Adrian Peterson, you know, the NFL, you know, you don't get paid to have the best moral character. So, you know, Andrew Berry is not being judged on the 53 nicest guys on the roster. He is paid. Kevin Stefanski is paid to win games. So again, take out all the moral dilemmas and whatnot. And I know that's hard for some people to separate. I get that totally, but I'm going to say six is the number I was thinking of too. And, but the one thing I'm a little bit worried about is, will there be a punishment that comes out this year and then it drags into next year? And then there's a separate second. So it's almost like a double jeopardy type situation. So that's my little bit of concern. But like you said, I think the best thing for this, and I think the NFL would agree, is to get this over with as fast as possible. And obviously with, you know, also the rights of the victims, the rights of Deshaun Watson, because the court of public opinion is going to make you guilty. You know, it's just, that's the way it is. But again, I don't want to, you know, lessen any of these victims that may have been, you know, through this. So I just am in the camp of let it play out, see what happens. And you know, we'll be playing football either way in the fall, but obviously that's going to affect the betting lines and things like that from a football perspective. So we will see what happens. Greg, I think you're going to be joining us again on Thursday. We'll talk about that. But let me ask you a last question before we get out of here. The Cleveland Guardians are 18-20. They're the streakiest team in the league. You know, you lose two to the Reds, who are terrible. And then you go out and beat the Houston Astros last night, who are a great team. So I'm going to just say, are they a contender or are they a pretender?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm going to say pretender. I was thinking about, you know, we're throwing these topics around, like what, I mean, one word that I would use to describe this team is mediocre. I just feel like we are the definition of a mediocre baseball team. You know, we can, like you said, we can go out and, you know, they probably played one of their best overall nine inning baseball games yesterday. They played well from start to finish. Obviously, we have probably the top MVP candidate in the American League right now. We'll see how that holds up. You can win the MVP in baseball and not be on a great team. So that's right. That's a chance for that to happen. But this just feels like a team that's going to win somewhere between 75 and 85 games. And I don't know, you know, what we can do to change that trajectory. I think,
right,
you know, starting rotation is good, but is the, you know, some of the guys have underperformed. The lineup is
shaky,
but has some ability. The bullpen, I think, is a little bit of a weak spot right now outside of Class A. It just doesn't, you know, but again, it's not terrible. And I think, again, we're just pretty mediocre across the board. I just don't see, we talked about the White Sox. The Twins are off to a good start. I mean, I think the White Sox will take a stranglehold of this division at some point, like they have in the past couple of years. And I just don't, you got to win probably 90 games, at least high 80s to get to the playoffs. So you got to be 15 or so over 500. Do we play, you know, 17 to 20 games over 500 from here on out? It's just, I want to see it. It's just hard for me to see.
Agreed. I think mediocre is a pretty good word to describe it, especially an 18-20 baseball team that wins five and then loses five. So very good way of saying it. It also shows they're very young. And I think it's going to be, you know, obviously, you want to see your team win and get to the playoffs and whatnot, but sometimes, you know, you hate to use this, but you got to trust the process. The Indians and now Guardians have always been really good at developing pitchers, getting these younger guys, Owen Miller, Kwan, whoever, up to snuff and getting them going. And then you lock up Jose Ramirez that hopefully, you know, your window opens up in a year or two. And, when some of these younger guys, before they start to get paid and you can kind of keep some key veterans around. So, with that said, Greg, we'll log off now, but, we will, come back and, we'll have plenty more on Thursday. So, we'll get back then. So appreciate you joining the show and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Justin. Have a good one.
All right. Everybody have a good day. We will see you on Thursday.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the video.